Well, that's the question we're all faced with, aren't we? The question everybody's thinking about. Who will I choose to be my leader? It's a question that people especially ask on election years, presidential election years. Other years, some people may not vote, but this is the year they think, well, we're voting for a president, so this is the year I need to vote. So there's this question that it's in all everybody's mind, who will I choose to be my leader? If you have the outline, the handout that you received when you came in, you want to take that. There's a couple of questions there that I want us to think about today as we think about who will choose as a leader, or how you choose a leader. That's the first question, really. How will I choose a leader? It's a question that I want to just encourage you, maybe right now, if you just jot down a few things. How are you going to choose a leader? How do you choose a leader? What do you base that on? Jot that down right there real quick. And as you're doing that, you know, it's interesting to think about how people choose their leader. People base that on various things. Psychologists study this. Sometimes people choose their leader based on appearance. They think, well, I want to think of a person, a specific person, individual that they think is a leader that reminds them of leadership, and that's how they vote. And maybe for them, it's an example. Maybe it's a military leader that they think of. That's what they do. They picture that, and that's who they think that should be the leader. Sometimes maybe it's a former president that they think of, like maybe it's Abraham Lincoln or Ronald Reagan or another one that they think of resembles true leadership, and that's how they vote. Or maybe it's a business leader. They picture a certain business leader, and that's how they vote. Or maybe it's somebody who's created change, like Martin Luther King, who said a genuine leader is not a searcher for consensus, but a molder of consensus. Or maybe they just picture, maybe it's an image of somebody that serves, a caring person. Maybe it's like Mother Teresa, or maybe Gandhi. And they have these images in their mind when they think about leadership. And these images, these appearances help them to determine, this is the kind of leader, this is what I think leadership is, this is how I'm going to vote. This is how I'm going to choose my leader. Now, if you remember back in 2008, when Obama was running for president at that time, he understood that people base their decision on appearance sometimes. For example, he designed his campaign plane to look very presidential. And if you remember, I remember this very clearly, it was all over the news, that he then traveled all around the world to meet with various world leaders because he wanted to bolster his appearance as a presidential leader. He realized the importance of appearance for some people when they choose a leader. And so sometimes when people choose a leader, they choose that based on appearance. And psychologists will tell you that even includes sometimes how tall a person is. In fact, over the past 100 years, in the majority of presidential elections, the taller candidate has won. Facial features are sometimes important, often important actually. The quality of a voice is a factor when people choose a leader. Even charisma becomes a factor, and which could even include a smile. You know, they look at the person and decide, oh, is this person somebody I want to choose, you know? Or there could be this, you know? Still kind of cute though, right? Or there's like that or that, you know? And so people base decisions sometimes when they choose leaders, they base it on appearance. Now, there's other factors that might come into play, even when you think about yourself, how you choose a leader. And maybe you choose a leader based on personal interest. People do this. People choose leadership based on what they want, what they desire. Like, that's the person who's going to get me what I want, so that's who I'm going to choose as a leader. Or sometimes it's like the best option. I hear this. I hear this lots of times. People look at the different people maybe they're trying to choose for, and a leader chooses a leader, and they think, you know, I don't know if I want to vote for any of these, but I guess maybe, you know, this is my best option, and so this is the one I will choose. And then there's this factor of values when it comes to choosing a leader. This is the one that takes a little more work to kind of get into, to look at, because you have to kind of think about when it comes to yourself, you have to think about, what do I believe? What are my values? What are my values in relationship maybe to family, to life, to the role of government, those kinds of things. And then you have to kind of look into, okay, the people that I'm looking at to vote for, what do they believe about life? What are their values about the role of government, about family, and those kinds of issues? And then you have to kind of compare and see if they line up. And that's why we've placed some resources at the information desk in the back. And then we've mentioned the past couple of weeks, you can go online and like actually look at your ballot before you vote and and kind of have to do a little work, but you have to think about what are your values and what are the values of the people you're looking at, the people you're choosing, and how do they match up? How do they line up? How will you choose your leader? There's a second question that's on that outline that I just want to challenge you just to kind of answer yourself as I continue to talk here. And it's this question of this: well, then what even makes a leader worth following? What makes a leader worth following? What qualities do I think makes a leader worth following? And the reason I think sometimes it's important for us to think through this is because if you don't think through this, the reality is people, you know, they will tell you why they think you're worth following or the other person is not worth following. You see that in the commercials. You see it in the debates. They'll tell you. But what do you think? What do you think makes a leader worth following? In fact, if you were to write down three words, if you're just jotting down three words real quick, what qualities, what do you think makes a leader worth following? You know, there's a book, it's called Strength-Based Leadership, and in it, it looks at great leaders and teams and why people follow. And in this book, it talks about how there was a Gallup study done. They actually surveyed 10,000 people they surveyed. And in the process of surveying those people, they asked them basically the same question that I just asked you. They asked them, in your own words, what makes a great leader? What makes a great leader? So they looked at the responses and they kind of pulled those together. And as they looked at those responses, they realized that in some cases, over 1,000 people would list the exact same words. What do you think those words were? Maybe you think it was wisdom. That the quality that they want in a leader that makes them worth following is they're wise. Actually, that was nowhere near the top. Maybe you think it was purpose. You think, well, that this, the leader had purpose, and so that's what you think was the word. Actually, it was nowhere near the top. Maybe you're here and you look at the words you just listed. Maybe you listed humor. Have you seen this video? It's like the most watched Facebook Live video ever.
Such a happy Chewbacca.
And so, you know, maybe you listed humor. Maybe that's what you placed down. Actually, maybe that's what you like in a leader, but no, that wasn't anywhere near the top. Here's some of the things that people said. They put these words together and they found out words like trust, words like honesty, integrity, respect were important when they thought about what makes a leader worth following. There was this word of compassion. Sometimes it was words like caring, or the leader was a friend, or the leader was happy or loving. That was one of the words. Some of the words that were described. Stability, or just that the leader provides strength and security, support, peace. That makes a leader worth following. Or even this, hope. A leader worth following is one that provides direction and faith and guidance. Maybe one of those, maybe it lines up with what you wrote down there. But here's the deal. When Jesus described leadership and what makes a leader worth following, he used one word. Only one word. One word that he described when it comes to leadership that makes a leader worth following. Servanthood. Being a servant. That's the word that he used when he described leadership over and over again. Jesus says leadership is service. It's servanthood. And in this series, you know, we've been looking at Jesus. We've looked at him as a storyteller. At times he would use parables, he would use stories to describe leadership and other different things. And at one point in time when he was talking about people who would inherit the kingdom of God, he actually said that there's this king who tells a group of people to go ahead, go in, enter the kingdom, because when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was in prison, you visited me. And the people, they're like, when did we ever do that? And Jesus, he said, well, the king says, I tell you the truth, whenever you did this for the least of these, whenever you served the least of these, you did it for me. That was how he described leadership. It wasn't about position. It wasn't about power. It was about service. We looked at Jesus as a teacher, and at one point, the mother of James and John goes to Jesus and says, Jesus, would you make my sons, would you put them in positions of honor in your kingdom? The disciples hear this, and man, they're like, what in the world? And they're like, this is wrong, and like, maybe I should have that position, and they start arguing over this, about position and power when it comes to leadership. And Jesus, he sees this as like as a teacher, as a teaching moment. And so here's what Jesus says. Jesus says, you know that rulers in this world lord it over their people. Officials, they flaunt authority over those under them. But among you it will be different. Because whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your, yeah. And he goes on, he says, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. Last week we talked about Jesus as a miracle worker. That God does the impossible. On one occasion, which often happened, people would come, they would want to hear Jesus speak. They would want to be healed, and the crowds, they had gathered numerous crowds, a large crowd, and many of them came from distant places, villages, and Jesus, it says Jesus had compassion on them. And so Jesus, he takes a few loaves of bread and a few fish from one person's lunch, a boy's lunch, and he actually feeds over 5,000 people. This amazing miracle. He does the impossible. And the people are going, this is amazing. This Jesus, he even meets our physical needs. Man, he should be our king. This is what we want as a leader. And so it says that when the people saw Jesus do this miraculous sign, they exclaimed, surely he's the one we've been looking for. Surely he's the prophet. Surely he's the Messiah that we've been looking for. And when Jesus sees that they were ready to force him to be their king, he walks away. He walks away. He slips away. I mean, Jesus, he had this opportunity. He could have had power, but instead he walks away because their view of leadership didn't line up with how he defined leadership. And for the Jewish people at that time, when it came to leadership, when they thought of leadership, what they thought of were, they thought of like the Roman military. That it was about military, it was about power, it was about force, it was about control, it was about position and governors and kings and emperors. When they thought of leadership, they thought about their own religious leaders, who it was about the rules, these rules that they would sometimes use to control and to even sometimes manipulate, but it was about following all the rules, it was position and authority. That's what they thought of. And so, this group of Jews, when they started thinking about Jesus, they didn't want to be under the authority of the Romans. They wanted less taxes. You know, they wanted somebody to provide for them, provide their needs for them. And this Jesus, he spoke with authority. He would do the impossible things. He would provide for their needs. And they're like, this is the one. We need him to overthrow the Romans. We want him to be our king. And Jesus had walked away at one point. And now it's this opportunity, this time when all Jews from all over Israel, they gather in Jerusalem for a time of the Passover, a time of celebration, a time that they would gather together. And they're there in Jerusalem and they know Jesus is coming and they think, this is our opportunity. We want Jesus to be our king. And so as Jesus enters the city, they start saying, Hosanna! We sometimes celebrate this as Palm Sunday. They say, Hosanna, and they start laying down the palm branches. They declare him king. And Jesus, when he comes into Jerusalem, he doesn't ride in like a mighty warrior. He doesn't ride in, and contrary to what somebody thinks, I don't know, I saw this picture when I was looking up Jesus coming in Jerusalem. He doesn't ride in like on a raptor or some kind of dinosaur. Jesus, he rides in on a donkey. There's nothing mighty about that right there, huh? Nothing mighty about it. He rides into Jerusalem on a donkey. His view of leadership was different. And for many people, leadership, it's about power. It's about position. It's about control. But Jesus comes and he says, I came to serve. And I came to give my life for many. James Merritt, he writes a book, it's called 52 Weeks with Jesus. And in it he says, the world measures greatness by how many people serve you. But Jesus measures greatness by how many people you serve. That's Jesus when it comes to leadership. And you would think that those who were closest to Jesus, those disciples, they've heard this over and over. You would think that they would understand it. But right after they enter Jerusalem, they find a place for them to share a meal with Jesus. This is right before he was going to face the cross and go on trial. And they find a place, they gather together, and it's Luke chapter 22. You can read about it there. And as they gather together to share this meal, it says, I mean, this is the last meal. They don't know this right at the time, but this is their last meal with Jesus before the cross. And they start arguing over position, arguing over leadership. And Jesus, if you read it in Luke chapter 22, once again, teaching moment, as a leader, Jesus says, in this world, the kings and the great men, they lord it over the people. They even call themselves friends of the people. But among you, it's different. Those who are the greatest among you should take the lowest rank. And the leader should be like a servant. A servant. Jesus' view of leadership was different. Jesus, he says leadership, if you're wanting to fill in the blank there. Leadership, it's servanthood. Leadership, it's servanthood. Maybe you're like me today. You're probably maybe wondering. I was wondering when I read this story in Luke, why in the world are they arguing? Well, if you're wondering why they argue, then you're going to have to turn to the book of John, because John, when he writes John, he writes it from a little bit of a different perspective on this story. And you find out in John chapter 13, you find out like why they're arguing. And so if you want to look that up on your app, on your phone, your mobile device, or if you have the scripture with you, look it up. It's John chapter 13. While you're looking that up, I just want to share a story. This past summer, I had an opportunity. I was with some teenagers and some parents and other adults, some adult leaders even, and we traveled to, oh, not say traveled, we went over to Columbus, and it's Lower Lights Ministries in Columbus, around what they call it, the Bottoms area, Hilltop. Sometimes you hear that on the news at nighttime, not always the safest area. And we were helping out this ministry called Lower Lights, and we spent a week there serving. And as we served, we were working with apartments there, cleaning out apartments that were used as transitional housing, and sometimes, you know, these transitional apartments, they were used for people who came out of prison and would live there, and the ministry would work with them and help them get back on their own, and so we were having to deal with bed bugs that week, and it was just all gross with that. And then we would do landscaping, we would serve meals and deliver meals, and just spending this week serving, and in the evenings, the guys, there were about 20 of us, part of this group, we would stay at one of the apartments that was sometimes used as transitional housing, and about 20 of us, you know, half of us downstairs, half of us upstairs, and we were going to bed, and it was about midnight, a little after. I think most people, you know, they were asleep, and all of a sudden I hear this noise upstairs, and it sounds like somebody's hacking, snorting. I mean, it's just loud. I mean, I'm thinking somebody, I think, is really sick. And I can hear this. It's up in the upstairs bathroom, and I'm thinking, I think I know what it is, and there's one thing I hate to deal with. You know what it is? Can't stand to deal with this. I know I'm not doing it. And so I'm laying there and I think, you know what? How can anybody sleep through this? You know? And so I text one of the other adults upstairs, and he actually responds back. He's awake. I mean, not just him, but I find out the rest of them, they're all awake, but nobody's doing anything. Nobody wants to do anything. And I'm going, and he's like, well, I don't like vomit. I'm not dealing with it. That's what he texted me. And I'm like, I'm not dealing with it either, you know? And so we're like responding back and forth by phone. Nobody's doing anything. And finally, I'm laying there. I'm going, well, if I hear it one more time, I guess I'll go up, you know? And, you know, the parents, the moms here who are like, come on, have compassion on the kid. You know, I find out, I go upstairs, I find out he drank 7 cans of Mountain Dew. No compassion, you know, no compassion, you know? So, but here's the deal, you know, I'm not wanting to deal with it. It's gross. It's disgusting. I don't want to clean that up. We go up and somebody has, and then we have to go back and forth about who's going to clean this up. And, you know, it's a whole nother story. But in the days of Jesus, they would walk around, and it's hard for us, I think, to really understand this. They would walk around. They didn't have shoes like we do. They didn't have paved streets. They didn't have sidewalks. And they walked around, often just their bare feet or with sandals. And they'd walk in the dirt. They'd walk in the mud. And their just feet would get filthy. And it would be gross. It would be disgusting. And nobody wanted to take care of that. Nobody wants to clean that up. Nobody wants to clean it up just like nobody wants to clean up vomit. And the disciples, they find a place. They find this place for Jesus to share a meal with them. And they forgot this little detail, because often when people would go into a house, you would take off your sandals, or you'd clean your feet before you'd go in. And usually it's the lowest person that gets that job. Usually it's a servant who would be there. And the disciples, it's like they left this out, and so they start arguing over who's going to do this. Nobody wants to do this. This is gross. I mean, they could have washed their own feet, right? But nobody wants to do it. Somehow they're arguing. Maybe they're saying, you know, Jesus chose me first. Jesus chose you last. I don't know what it looked like exactly. But they're arguing over this. And Jesus, he takes a basin and he takes a towel. And Jesus goes over and he washes the disciples' feet. He washes them. And Jesus not only says leadership is servanthood, he actually models leadership as servanthood. Probably noticing a theme with those fill in the blanks right now. He models leadership as servanthood. And he says this, do you understand what I'm doing? You call me teacher, you call me Lord, and you're right, that's who I am. I am teacher and I am Lord. And since I am Lord and teacher, I've washed your feet. And that's what you should do. You ought to wash each other's feet. I've given you an example to follow. Do as I've done. Do as I've done. Jesus says leadership's about servanthood. He models leadership as servanthood. And then he invites these disciples. He invites them to do the same. And he invites us to do the same, to lead by serving. But the problem is, we live in a world where leadership, it's seen as power, it's seen as position, it's seen as control, it's seen as selfish ambition, getting your own agenda accomplished, and using sometimes people to get what you want. And people who are choosing leaders, they're asking, what's in this for me? What are you going to do for me? And they choose leaders based on appearance and based on personal interest. In fact, sometimes they just demand their own way. And people, they place their hope in leaders who they hope will get them more food, get them less taxes, solve their problems. And people, including Christians, they spend their time demanding government to change. And please hear me on this, because has the gap between Christians and what Christians believe and what Christians value, has that gap continues to grow, and it will, has that gap between what Christians believe and value and what government endorses, has that continues to grow? You need to understand that no law, no government rule can address the deeper issue, what lives in the heart. What lives in the heart The problem's deeper. The problem is selfishness. The problem is this attitude of selfishness. It's a sin issue. It's a heart issue. So what can you do? What can we do? You see, Jesus, he knows the problem's deeper. And that's why when Peter, when he confronts Jesus, he actually stands up. Jesus is going to wash their feet. Peter gets up and confronts Jesus. And he says, no way. You're not going to wash my feet. You will not. Jesus, you're the leader. Do you understand? The people, they just declared, they're like worshiping you as king. You're the leader. Leaders don't wash feet. Peter says, you're not going to do this. See, Peter's his picture, his image of leadership, it's a selfish view of leadership. And Jesus says, unless I wash you, you won't belong to me. See, Jesus was talking about what he came to do. That he came to serve. That he came to give his life so that we can be forgiven, so that our hearts can be washed, so that our lives can be changed, our hearts changed. That's what I like about baptism. It's this symbol of, this outward symbol, really, of what takes place inwardly. That Jesus washes us and he gives us a new heart. He creates this new heart in us. And Peter, in this story, if you have that there, you're going to see that Peter says something I think is a little, for us, it sounds a little awkward. Because when Jesus says, you know, unless I wash you, you won't belong to me, Peter, sometimes he says things, I don't know if he knows what they mean, and he just says, okay, then Jesus, well then wash all of me. But really what Peter, in essence, what he was doing, he was inviting Jesus to make his heart new, to make his heart different. And if you're wondering, well, what do we do? What can I do? What can we do? Then you need to understand, it starts with you, and it starts with you. If you haven't done this, you need to do this. It starts by asking Jesus, Jesus, give me a new heart. Jesus, wash the selfishness away. Jesus, forgive me. I want to be different. If you're wondering what you can do, it starts by that. And then it also means you do what Jesus invites you to do. You lead by serving. That we lead by serving. A lot of times in November, the first weekend or two, some churches, they celebrate like what they call Orphan Sunday. And it's a time when you recognize the importance of caring for those who need family. And I know some of you here, you do foster care, you're foster parents. Some of you here, you've adopted kids. What a great way to serve. I have a friend, Valerie Smith, and She was a foster parent for a while, and then she decided to adopt a child, and she adopted a child, and she saw the government system. Sometimes it can be messy, it can be difficult, it can be hard, and she was sitting around with some other friends, and they were sitting around, and they were asking, what can we do? And somebody asked the question, what can we do to change things? What can we do to make a difference? I want you just to listen real quick, just to listen, just a snippet, just a little bit of Valerie's story.
After Will and I had our own foster son and then adopted him, we realized that there's a whole group of people involved in foster care that can sometimes be forgotten, and it is a tough job. So when Jen Ballinger approached a group of parents and said, what can we do to support these people? What can we do to love these kids and these families and these caseworkers? We started talking to people in the area and found out that there were some very tangible ways that we could work and show them Jesus's love and show them who the church is and who the church should be. And we were able to start with a few things, and now we've spread out so that now we have our own nonprofit organization that's able to care for caseworkers and foster families and the kids themselves so that we can show them that they are loved and they're not forgotten.
So Valerie, she gathered with this group of people and she started this nonprofit Fostering Further, and they started gathering together really as a result of just asking that question, what can we do? What can we do to change things? And they started doing things to care for foster families and not just foster families, to even care for caseworkers, to demonstrate love. As a result, Jobs and Family Services this past year, they decided they wanted to give out for the first time this award. They call it the Children's Services Community Compassion Award. And they wanted to recognize maybe just some people who go above and beyond caring for abused and neglected kids. And they give out their first award. And you know who they recognize? They recognize Valerie and what they've done to serve. And Valerie, she would tell you, I don't want an award because it's not about an award. It's about serving. It's about leading by serving to create change. Some of you, many of you, you know Scott Hayes. Started the Lookup Center, and Lookup Center that provides dental care, and there's opportunities for people who need things to shop with furniture, clothing, and those kinds of things. And there's even an after-school program, and they serve meals, community meals, on Monday nights there at the Lookup Center. And so you know Scott with that. What you may not know is less than 2 weeks ago, BHP, Behavioral Healthcare Partners of Central Ohio, they recognized Scott, and they gave him an award because of the way the Lookup Center has served the community. And Scott, I read the article, I was reading it online, just in the newspaper, and it was like, he said, you know, there's other people who serve. There's other people that you know, they serve too. And Scott would tell you, it's not about an award. It's about leading by serving. That's how you create change. We lead by serving. And for some of you here, you may think, well, you know, I can't do what Valerie's done. I can't do what Scott's done. You know what? But you can still come alongside and you can support them. Maybe it's financially. Maybe it's actually serving alongside them. For some of you here, maybe God might call you to serve by adopting or doing foster care. For some of you, if you're thinking, I can't do foster care, I'm not able to adopt, but you can come alongside those who do, and you can say, you know what? What can I do to help? What can I do? Maybe can I do yard work? Can I help with groceries? Can I maybe watch the kids so that you can have a night out? Because I want to help create change, and I want to help make a difference, and I want to lead by serving. And for some of us, I think we sometimes need to realize that leading by serving, it starts in our home. Many times I talk sometimes with couples and who are struggling, and the one person's going, well, the other person doesn't meet my needs. They're not doing what I want. The problem's not me. The problem's them. Sometimes the problem is a deeper issue. Selfishness. And we need to say, Jesus, wash me. Jesus, forgive me. Jesus, change my heart. And we need to lead by serving. It starts in our home. Sometimes it starts with teenagers. I know you may have difficulty with parents, but maybe it starts by serving. Maybe you have trouble with a coworker, or you're having a situation at work with your boss, and you need to understand sometimes change, leading, we lead by serving. And what the world needs. What the world needs today is the church to be the church. And as you vote and think about leadership this week, leadership starts with serving. And it starts with us. It starts with you. It starts with me. It starts by serving in such a way that it impacts our home. It impacts our community. It impacts our world. Would you pray with me? God, thank you so much, Jesus, that you came. That you came and you died for us. You died so that we can be forgiven. You died to address this deeper issue within us, this heart issue, this issue of selfishness, of pride. And you want to wash us. You want to forgive us. And so maybe today there's some here right now, as they're thinking about you, Jesus, maybe they realize they need to ask you to change their hearts. And so right now, if you're sitting there in your seat and you know that's you, if you need to ask Jesus to forgive you, if you need to ask Jesus to wash your heart, to create a new heart in you, would you ask him to do that right now? And maybe for some of us here, you know, Jesus, He's asking you, God's asking you, the Spirit's speaking to you right now. And he's saying, you need to lead by serving. You need to lead by serving. Maybe it's at home. Maybe it's at work. Maybe it's at school. Maybe, Maybe it's a place in our community, or he's calling you to rise up and do something to serve others, to make a difference. Would you answer that call? God, thank you so much. Help us, God, change our hearts. Help us to lead by the way we serve. Amen. Amen. You know, if you asked him to wash your heart in a sense and to give you a new heart, if you did that, I want to just encourage you, challenge you, actually. If you took that step after the service, we have a prayer room in the back, and somebody will be there. They would love just to talk to you about what that means, and to even have somebody come along and encourage you and walk beside you in that decision. And if you're here and you just need healing, or you're praying for somebody else, or you're praying, maybe seeking how you can serve because of a difficult situation, somebody will be there, and they'd love to talk with you about that. You know, I think it seems appropriate that we take communion today, because this story, when Jesus washes the disciples' feet, that's the same time in which Jesus, he shared this meal with his disciples. And communion is just a way we break bread. Jesus broke bread, and we drink juice, and it's just a simple way of recognizing that Jesus' body was broken, his blood was shed for us, so we can have a new heart, so we can be forgiven. And so we're gonna sing a song, as we do in here in just a moment. Our host team, they're going to come forward, and if you want to just take, there's two cups together there. You can take those two cups and hold on to that. I'll give some instructions in a little bit, and we're going to take communion together. If you need gluten-free, that's available actually at the back, the information desk. You can go there. We're going to sing, and the host team's going to come forward.
Sacrifice that saved.
great song.